Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
So on a Tuesday, we discuss and dissect everything that went on in Mental Health Monday with Mental Health Extra. My name's Mick Coyle. If you subscribe to the Mental Health Monday podcast, you automatically get this into your podcast feed. See it as like a... What are these equivalent shows, Jake, you get on like Sky when you watch a TV show? Well, and then there's like a show after it talking about what's just happened.
Yeah, I like when you say it automatically. We're just like forcing this on people, really, aren't
we? Oh, absolutely. but it's worthwhile stuff. Jake Mills joins us in the studio as well from Chasing the Stigma, a fantastic charity doing great work, and not just here in Liverpool, but right across the country. Loads of stuff going on. Hope Street were the organisation featured in this week's show. Fantastic work between Dom and Sheila. There was a moment in the conversation where Sheila kind of went, oh, I'm kind of sick of telling the story over and over again. And I kind of made the point to her, although you might be sick of telling that story, the value of sharing that story with a different audience each time, or sharing it with people on the radio, you can't write that down. You can't quantify how important that might be.
No, and that's exactly what they're trying to do as well through Hope Street, which is brilliant. I remember it was before New Year, I think, when... Dom was saying that they wanted to do it, and they've worked hard to do that. You know, they really have, and they're doing it for the right reasons. They're doing it because they see the value in it. And yeah, you know, Sheila might not want to kind of talk about it as much as she does as publicly. She does asking Dom to speak for it on her behalf, but you know, her story is really, really powerful. It's really important. And again, you made the point, but just to reiterate it, nobody should ever feel like they should have to do it publicly. But you know, they do tell their story publicly because they know how important that is. And just going to visit where they've done it, because I spoke at an event recently, and you can just see that people value it, really.
Absolutely. So when Dom and Sheila came in, we recorded the interview rather than do it live, because sometimes if people are uncertain about how much they want to share, sometimes it's easier to record the interview, because then they can say, well, actually, I'd rather not answer that. And actually, through the interview, actually, Sheila gave more and more of herself as she opened up about it, having Dom there as well. For people who maybe missed the show, Hope Street is, although a famous street in Liverpool, this is an organisation which has sessions, which are sort of two-parters, if you like, where people share stories about their own mental health journey, but then also there's an alternative sort of like a solution or a lifestyle thing that they introduce as well, something that people might want to get involved in as well. Very much based around this idea of, there wasn't this when we were going through this, so if there's something there now, then that actually does people a favour. And the connectivity that you can get with people, and within a connectivity within a social movement, can really be beneficial, not just for those who are affected directly by mental health problems, but those family members who are dealing with a family member with a mental health issue.
Yeah, I think that was what was a really important thing from the conversation yesterday, and the things that Dom and Sheila are doing, is that it is looking at it from this different point of view as well, about the people who are meant to be there to care for and to look after, and that very often is a thankless task, but it's also a really, really, really difficult task, because I think the emphasis that we put on it generally is look after the person who's not well, and that kind of expectation from the partner or the person who's meant to be there is almost like, well, you're not allowed to struggle because you're meant to be looking after this other person. And it's so hard, it really is, and that's why I was glad that Dom was there to tell his side of things and his point of view. He made a really good point about how, and we've discussed this personally as well, about how you can maybe say to your friends, oh, this is what's going on, and she's saying this, or she's acting like this, and Dom said it himself, they're kind of, their priority or their loyalty lies with you. And more often than not, it might be that they'll say, you're best without her and get away from her, and she's taking a mick or whatever. So it's a really, really difficult role to play, that, to look after the person. And I think it's a conversation that needs to be happening more and more. The more that we're talking about the people who need help and suffering themselves, the more that we need to include carers as well.
Jake Mills is with us in the studio. This week's Mental Health Monday is available to download as a podcast. Just type in Mental Health Monday podcast into your search engine or any podcast provider. They all come up, all previous episodes. There's about 70 to listen to now. I got an exclusive on Mental Health Extra. Going to bring you this now. The brother of the Frightened Rabbit frontman, Scott Hutchison, has been speaking to Radio City Talk. In his first interview since his death, the 36-year-old took his own life last month following a long battle with depression. You may have been reading about it and heard about it in the news, even if you've never heard the music. Now, Grant Hutchison told our reporter Hope Webb about his desire to raise awareness of mental health.
So it's been obviously a few weeks since I last saw you, and a lot of things have changed. I mean, first of all, I guess the question I would ask is how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, actually. You know, it doesn't feel like that long. It's been, you know, a month and a half now since Scott died. So, I've been numb, feeling a bit lost, not really knowing what I'm doing, where I'm going. But I'm slowly getting to this point now where the focus is to turn a tragic event into something positive and try and do what I can to make sure that no one else goes through what Scott went through.
And even just looking at the outpouring of love, you know, since this tragic event, and even before when he was missing, the fans, and not even just fans, loads of people have kind of sent that message of love and support and really kind of got behind what you guys have been looking to speak about as well. What's that been like?
It's been really helpful for me to see the support and the impact Scott's art and Scott's personality had on people's lives in a really big way, not just, you know, small things and not just, I saw a show, it was good, I enjoyed it, that was a good night. It's been things like, this song changed my life, or, you know, your music, Scott's lyrics, stopped me from doing something similar to Scott, you know. That's been amazing. And I think, even for me, it's been overwhelming and not a surprise, but there's been a lot more stories like that than I thought, and it's been good, been really good to read, and little things, stories about Scott that I didn't know about, you know, as well. That's the other thing, little things that he did where he'd send someone a picture, or you know, he'd spoken to someone after a show or before a show, he'd got them a ticket for a show just because he wanted to do something nice, you know. So it's been great, and I feel, especially for me, you know, I can't really speak for the rest of the family, but my, you know, connection to the fans is very real as well. So that's been, it's felt like an extended family in a way, which has been really helpful.
And a lot of the focus has been, like you mentioned there, on mental health and people reaching out and saying that he helped them through difficult times. I mean, has that been tricky to know that he helped other people, but obviously couldn't help himself?
It's not been tricky, no. It's been great. It has. It's been really, it's a big positive thing for me to read, because I think one of the main things about this is to realise and understand that it's not just Scott, you know, and anyone can go through things like this, and, you know, yes, there'll be certain triggers and certain people who are maybe more susceptible to it, but, you know, there are no rules, mental illness isn't something that anyone's immune to. So one person's life who works in a supermarket or is a joiner or works at a radio station is just as important as a singer in a band, and that's been amazing to see how many stories and how many people, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people that our music and specifically Scott's lyrics have helped them through difficult times.
Has this experience opened your eyes in a whole new light to mental health in a way maybe that it wasn't before?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, unfortunately, one of the thoughts I've had to deal with and think through is what could I have done, you know? And it's not a, it's not something that I'll carry forever or that's really a weight on me, but it's obviously something that is going to cross my mind, and I guess the main thing I'm taking from that is that, you know, I maybe at the time wasn't educated enough, and still am, you know. I'm not saying in the past month I've learned everything there is to learn, that's impossible, but not knowing enough was probably my biggest regret from it, you know, because it's not something I've suffered from in the same way as Scott. So it's always hard for me to empathise without that lack of experience or having gone through it. But that, you know, doesn't mean that you can't help. And I know I did. I'm not saying I didn't help him, because I know I did. But yeah, I think education and learning about it and speaking about it to people that maybe don't experience it, don't understand it, is an important thing.
So when you learnt the news of what had happened to Scott, then it must have kind of hit you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was always in the back of my mind, you know, and that outcome would... that would be the outcome, and although, you know, I maybe didn't know the full extent of his exactly how he felt, but I knew how low he could be and how desperate he felt at times. So in that way, you know, it wasn't out of the blue. It wasn't a massive shock. In relative terms, you know, if anyone has listened to our music and Scott's lyrics, will know that it was a real battle. You know, nothing. The words he wrote were not, you know, he didn't really mask them. You know, although he's the most talented songwriter I know, lyricist. It was all very honest and open. You know, and he didn't really hide behind much. So yeah, obviously, you know, my brother's death is something that I didn't think I would experience at this time or in this way, but it wasn't completely out of the blue.
And obviously it's still very fresh for you, but if you were to offer some advice to people maybe who are concerned about family members or who are even struggling themselves or have loved ones, what would you say?
I mean, that's a difficult thing to do. You know, every situation is really different, and it's hard to. I wouldn't want to say something that might not apply to that particular person or that particular situation. But I think for me, if there was something I could have done or feel like it would have been a good thing to do, was just to educate myself on it. You know, people will say, oh, you should talk about it, you should let people know you're there, and that's all, yeah, those are all good things to do, but sometimes not, you know, sometimes people who suffer from mental illness don't want to talk about it, and to force them to do that is not healthy, letting them know you're there, yeah, is great, but again, it's quite often that puts the onus on that person to reach out to you. You go, right, I'm here if you need me. You know, then they have to go pick up the phone and say, I need you, when they might be struggling to even pick up the phone in the first place. So for me, it's just now, what I'm doing now is reading as much as I can about mental illness, mental health awareness, what's being done, what's not being done, what could be done in loads of different areas. So I think, yeah, educating yourself about it, talking to other people about it, not necessarily the person that you think might be affected by it, but just finding out as much as you can about it. And if there's people out there who are suffering and feel like they don't have anyone to talk to, there is always some, and it can help. Like I say, it doesn't help everyone, but it's the contact from human to human is quite a strong thing, and although that can be a terrifying thing to think about if you're struggling with depression or anxiety, it can make a massive difference.
Is that the goal for you now then, to educate yourself, to raise awareness and to do all you can to kind of shed light on mental health?
Now I think my focus will shift towards doing what I can to try and ensure that people don't have to go through what Scott went through, right up to the very end, right up to taking their own life. That to me is just, it's unfathomable that would be an option, but it is for so many, too many people. Too many people are taking that, are seeing that as an option, and that's because not enough's been done earlier on. Obviously, suicide prevention is an important issue, and there are people out there that deal with that. But for me, the education in mental health, mental illness, and is where I think there could be more done, and at a young age as well. So that's the plan for me, and I don't know exactly. Like I said, I can't claim to be a mental health expert. Lots of people can. I think there's always more you could learn about it, but just talking as someone who's lost their brother through suicide because of depression, then there's more that could be done, definitely. And I think with the situation I'm in, it would be, I feel like, a responsibility to do what I can. I've got a lot of tools personally and professionally to raise funds, raise awareness, connect people who might not be able to connect with each other, and for me to ignore that wouldn't be right. That's my focus now.
Jake, you get a sense from that as well, and it's one of those things where I didn't know enough about mental health, and when we talk about educating people, it's so that base knowledge is right across the board there when people find themselves in a situation within a family, within a workplace, within an educational establishment, whatever it is. If people were clued up, that's not to say things would happen differently, but people might have a greater understanding, spot signs, know when to intervene.
Yeah, and knowing how to talk as well. It's this idea of that if you ask the majority of people on the street to describe a word about mental health, they'll probably come back negative. Mental health is something we all have. Mental health is a really good thing. It's a really positive thing, and it can be a negative thing as well. It's just health. It should be that we know more about our health, we know more about our mental health, which will make it easier to talk about. If we're talking about it when it's good, it'll be easy to talk about when it's bad. Yeah, you can spot signs, but also it's about knowing how to guide people to help, guide people to support and to find our support. And, with that interview there and something that we've talked about before as well, it's really important to have the support there for the people who have been bereaved by suicide as well. And support does exist nationally and locally, so you've got SOBS, which is the Survivors of Bereavement by Suicide. And on Friday, I'll be going to the opening of Paul's Place, which I know that you've had Agnes and Joe on here before, and I think the mayor's going to open that on Friday. And again, it's just another example of people who have gone through something themselves and said, you know what, I've recognised a huge, huge gap in the support that's available, and are just going about it and doing it themselves. So it's you know, as much as we talk about the actual suicides themselves, it's about the people who are left behind as well, and that they can get support and should.
Yeah, and if there is to be a legacy, I noticed that Frightened Rabbit, they were due to play the Meltdown Festival in London instead of their set. Instead, now there's going to be a panel on mental health awareness within the music industry. Contributions from various people, including Kristen Hirsch of Throwing Muses, Stefan from Placebo, music and poet Disraeli, and Christine Brown from the music charity Help Musicians UK. That's a good example of somebody thinking, right, we can do something amid this terrible, terrible story that might make a difference, that might shine a light on something else.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will make a difference to all the people who are there, who will attend. It will hit home to quite a number of them. So that's again, using a really good example of using your kind of platform and taking that responsibility to try and make a difference. So fair play to them for doing that, because that's a really, really good thing.
And I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you again. When people see people within the arts in particular, because it's often where it plays out, people go, oh, he's a troubled soul. Mm. Or, you know, that people often see, you know, interviews and examples from this particular case, people who've given interviews 3-6 months ago, 2 years ago, where they're specifically talking about having had suicidal thoughts, battling depression, demons, whatever phrase that they use. And yet we see it as some sort of, for some, almost like a badge of honour that our artists have got these, you know, troubled minds, and actually that fuels their creativity. You know, and then you hear about, you know, the great artists, when they settled down, got married and had kids, you know, their art was no good anymore. They needed that terror, you know, those dark moments, you know, the black dog. They needed all that to, and I just think, do we just put an end to that and just say, actually, no, there was somebody who was reaching out, and we thought that it was great because it seemed like they were a more interesting or in-depth character than we presumed, but actually, what they were doing was they were battling problems which they didn't really know how to deal with outside of putting it into music.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's something to be said about turning your kind of dark times or your struggles into something positive, whether that's music or art or whatever. But I think you made a point a couple of weeks ago about when somebody dies and we go back and look at what they said in this lyric or in this interview, and actually they were cries for help. They were putting it out there to say, I'm feeling this way and struggling. And I seen that this week or last week, when there was a woman who was on Love Island last year, and she died last week. And I honestly, within like 5 minutes of it being public knowledge, there was people pulling out tweets and interviews to say, oh, look, she was saying that she was struggling with online abuse and all that. And it's like, well, why are you only pulling that out now? Why are you only mentioning that now? Why have you waited to that point? So it's about acknowledging the moments and the signs and the words, but knowing what to do about it as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. Sophie Graydon, I think, was her name. I don't watch Love Island, but I don't know the story. So much has been made of sort of her experience. I think she was a Miss Great Britain or something like that. One of these people who you presume, because she's on Love Island and because she's a Miss Great Britain, or everything must be absolutely fine. And clearly people have got things going in their life. They don't have to be Miss Great Britain. They don't have to be. But I think the other thing is, you know, when there's like a reality TV thing going on as well, I've noticed other people coming out of it where they go, with this reality TV generation, what they do, they put you on TV. You're on TV for 6 weeks, for 2 months, for 3 months, you come out, you win 75 grand in cash. That kicks, you know, your problems down the road for a little bit. You do a couple of nightclub owners, you know, openers. Mm-hmm. You do a couple of like meet and greets. You maybe write a book, And then you get asked to do I'm a Celebrity or something. You come out of that and then suddenly you start looking around going, well, what happens next?
Mm.
At what point do I just go and get a job working in my local supermarket again? Because that's who I am. I'm not a better person because I've been on TV. And actually that idea that there's a responsibility for those shows to go, hang on a minute, we are picking you out of nowhere, putting you up on the pedestal, giving you opportunities which you may or may not be able to handle, and then taking them all away again. And how you deal with it after that is entirely up to you.
Yeah, that's got to be difficult for anyone to be thrusted into the kind of the public life and limelight and having to deal with that in general. Never mind being locked away in an island as lovely as it might look, or in a house or whatever. It's hard. It must be hard. And there's got to be that adjustment, and they've got to have help with that adjustment as well.
There's a story today in the Times, yesterday from the Times. I just wanted to pick this out. Mental health is a bigger concern for students than tuition fees, the university's minister has said. I don't know if the two are playing off against each other and what's more concerning. I don't think there's an exclusivity thing here. Calling on the universities to find sophisticated ways to support students before a summit on the issue at Bristol University, where there have been 10 suicides in less than 2 years, with a quote saying, mental health is much bigger if you're talking to students in regard to concerns. You now have 1 in 2 18 to 30-year-olds going to university, so people are arriving at university with different needs, with the university's minister saying, university should alert parents earlier if a student had mental health problems. I feel that some of the extreme problems are so severe that involving parents could help avoid some of the tragedies. So I think it's an interesting that one, isn't it? Because university, for a lot of people, is that first moment where you are an adult on your own. The support networks are kind of there but aren't there. It's kind of like maybe the easiest transition you can make into sort of your own life, but within still an environment which has a structure around it. Although quite clearly there's still a suggestion that actually that link with home, that link with the parents, is something which might still be gone.
Yeah, I think there was very recent ONS statistics that came out as well about kind of how big a problem it is in universities at the moment. It has to be addressed. It has to be addressed kind of quickly as well. It is that kind of, it's almost a bit like a pretend grown-up life where it's the first time that you're away from school and all that type of side of things, but also it's a bit of a sheltered grown-up or sheltered reality as well. But it's hard. You're going into debt straight away. Mm-hmm. You're being told that you have to work harder for your degrees. You're being told that your degrees don't mean anything. And all the other pressures that are coming with it, as well as trying to work and everything else. It's a really difficult time, not to mention if you're away from home and all that stuff. So universities, I think, certainly the universities locally and people I've spoken to at universities do appreciate that it's something that they need to address. But it's how and the resources that they can have, and it all comes down to money as well as and having that those people on hand.
We like to talk about on this program positive work that's been done in regard to mental health. It's probably worth highlighting where improvements need to be made. There is a survey out this week from the Association of Child Psychotherapists, and I mean the findings of it are a national disgrace. The Guardian report exposes a serious and worsening crisis for the NHS through a survey of those working in child and adolescent mental health services, CAMHS, as people call it. The number of children and adolescents failing to get the right treatment or, quote, fully slipping through the cracks is on the rise. So more people are not getting treatment. That's more people not getting the treatment they need. And also specialist services moving towards something of less quality and rigour. People aren't getting the help that they need. The services that are there are getting worse. They did a survey of 416 child and adolescent psychotherapists. So the worst affected were those with the most severe and long-standing needs. So those who need it the most and those with the long-standing issues are getting a worse service. I mean, this isn't like, you know, this is the mental health time bomb gone off. Specialist services were disappearing and senior clinical roles and disciplines were being dismantled, leading to pressure on lower banded staff. Treatment focused on symptoms rather than the whole child or young person in context. Children and young people were left to get worse before being seen, and there was an increasing mismatch between need and treatment offer. Offered competitive tendering had led to unrealistic and underfunded models that left services fragmented and staff isolated. I mean, you know, we like to make jokes about stories on this program. You know, we try and think about lighthearted. But this is staff, low morale, poor working conditions. One child psychotherapist said, "I am considering leaving the NHS as I am worried it is no longer safe to practice. It is tragic to witness the demise of a once flourishing and truly multidisciplinary specialist CAMHS. My skills are going to waste." I mean, this is supposed to be the solution.
Yeah,
these are supposed to be the answers. These are supposed to be the front line when we need them the most. And actually, they're getting worse. They are. You've got young people slipping through the cracks. Those who need the service the most are the ones who have been let down the most. People are wanting to walk away. You know, there'll be people on the front line who are thinking, "Help me, help them."
Yeah, and that's why, you know, the likes of the people who we've already spoke about, the people you have on this show, are the ones who are saying, "Well, we have to do something about it." You're absolutely right. It is a national scandal, and that's why I will never apologise for going on about it. That's why the work that you're doing and having these conversations is so important. And people might think that mental health is a bit of a buzzword at the moment, a bit of a fashionable thing to talk about, but it is a national scandal and something that we can't shout loudly enough about. It. This cannot just be tomorrow's chip paper. This has to be out there and has to be talked about, and it's not. And what can we do apart from just keep fighting and keeping our voices heard as loudly as possible and try and get as many people to join us?
I'm hugely depressed by that one. I hope that those people who are working within the service at the moment have kind of got, you know, the ability to stick with it for a time being. There's talk of extra funding coming in by 2021. You know, 2021 is getting closer every day, but 2021 is a long time off. And also, those children who are 15 now will be 18 in 2021. And you know, if you can fix problems when you're 15, very different to fixing problems once you get into adulthood. The Care Quality Commission have had a look through these services in regard to CAMHS requiring improvement for safety. 39% required improvement for safety. Those surveyed were asked if they could see any evidence of the government's claim of making one of the biggest expansion of services in Europe. 93% said they had seen no evidence of this. So for all the money that the government are saying is coming, virtually every single one of those 416 child and adolescent psychotherapists said, "No, I haven't seen it." Mm. So that's the reality on the front line there as well. Take a look at that. It's the ACP who've done the survey there. Take a look at it. I mean, it's difficult to read, but actually it's out there. The Guardian got the report there, and we're highlighting the issue here on Mental Health Extra. Jake, just wanted to mention, by the way, the team at Hope Street are very keen to hear from people who talk about mental health or are involved in mental health therapies or whatever it is, lifestyle changes and things like that. I've said to them, I'll tell you what, go through the entire back catalogue of Mental Health Monday, because there's loads in there. But I'll say it again, if people are working within the field, if it's to do with sports, the arts, crafting, anything in between, if you've got your own personal story, the Hope Street team are really keen to get people on board to hear those stories, to share those stories as well, in a kind of a face-to-face way. So I said that I'd mention it on Mental Health Extra, so people, if they wanted to contact us or contact directly Hope Street, they can get on board.
Yeah, and the environment that they've created as well is so, it's just sitting around having a coffee and a cup of tea and talking, so it's not intimidating at all.
And I said, "Oh, you want to get Jake Mills?" Yeah, he'd already been on. Of course he had. He'd already treaded there. Thank you for your time today, Jake. Thank you for joining us on Mental Health Extra. Mental Health Extra from Radio City Talk, following on from Mental Health Monday. Thanks to the team who put together the Frightened Rabbit interview as well.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.